I'm Brian McCreath at Symphony Hall with Olivier Latry, who's here for, I think, the third time with the Boston Symphony. Olivier, I remember talking with you in, I think it was maybe 2015 when the Michael Gandolfi piece was played for the first time. And it's a pleasure to have you back. Thanks for taking a little bit of time to talk with me today.
So thank you very much. I'm so pleased to be here for the third time, I would say.
Well, coming here for the third time, you've had experience with the Symphony Hall organ in the past. Did that help you at all in terms of what you might expect to do with Strauss and with Scriabin in this concert?
Not at all. No. In fact, each time we arrive for a new repertoire, we have to rethink about the organ in another way. And in fact, I made the registration. So, you know, the stage is full of chairs for musicians, etc., etc. So the organ is just on one corner, just behind the second level, and I am a little bit like in a cabin, and I do not hear anything from the organ. And the first rehearsal was, I would say, a disaster because I was far too loud, and I could not realize that, in fact. And so I saw André's face. Say, okay, am I not together with the orchestra or something? And so, and it was the problem of loudness that I could not realize. And so I spent a day after the rehearsal just to have the console in another place, just to be sure that the sound would fit with the orchestra. And in fact, it worked very well this morning, and I'm very pleased that and more relaxed, I would say.
Well, and to be clear for listeners who know Symphony Hall, if, as you're looking at the stage, you're to the left, almost under the first balcony. The console is situated so far away that I wondered in rehearsal how much you could really perceive the balance yourself. You have to be trusting Andres to really tell you kind of what's going on.
Yes, and in fact, Andres cannot have the real balance, and we have to ask some people in the hall, especially his assistant, just to be sure that the balance would be okay. And this is the only way. And, you know, I should not say all the secrets, but, well, we won't say that to anybody, all right? It will be our secret to all of us. In fact, we agreed with this assistant that even during the concert, she will be at a place where I can see her, and she will make signs just to be sure for the balance.
And it does change with the audience in the hall. It'll change a little bit in the acoustic of the hall. Will change a little bit.
Yes, in fact, I was listening the concert yesterday with the Grand House Orchestra and the cellist Gauthier Capuçon, and I was first a little bit anxious about this change in the acoustic, because there is no more reverberation that we have in the empty hall. And also, there's another thing which is very important for the concert, is that the musicians are more confident, and especially after the second or maybe for the third concert, and they play louder. So we have to adjust each time. And for the organ, it's of course not very easy, because when the registrations are made, it's made forever. But we have a system here with what we call a swell boxes. And in fact, most of the pipes are enclosed in a box, and then we can just open or close the shutters. And then that makes the sound more or less loud, of course. And it works pretty well, because I can adjust at any time very quickly.
That's great. So tell me a little bit from your perspective as someone who not only is known for your work at Notre Dame Cathedral, which we'll get to in a minute, but also you're familiar with organs around the world, I'm sure. How do you put the organ here in Symphony Hall in context? What kind of an instrument is it? And what do you look forward to when you come to Symphony Hall about what this instrument can do?
Well, I think in a hall, concert hall, the most important thing for an instrument is to be versatile. So to be able to do a lot of things, to go very fast from one pianissimo to a fortissimo, and of course the opposite. And also having some sounds which can follow very well the strings, for example, other which can follow and complete the brass, etc. And in fact, most of the organ that I've seen, especially the old organs from the 80s or even before that in concert halls, were church organs put in a concert hall. And it just didn't work because we need to have those swell boxes. We need to be able to have, you know, the nuance that the conductor requires. And it has to go immediately, just like this. And so if we have for example, no combination action, no swell boxes. It's just impossible. And then the problem is that then the conductors hate the organs, and which is not good. And because it can work, and this organ here proves that it works very well for the orchestra. I would not sure that it could work for an organ recital, for example. But maybe for some pieces, but not for everything. And we will have to choose the repertoire very carefully, just to be sure to make right connection between the organ and the repertoire. But it's I think this organ is really at its place because it is a real orchestral organ.
Ah, yeah. Okay, I see. And yes, it's not something that would occur to a lot of people that you can't just take an organ out of a church, plop it in a concert hall, and expect that it works fine. It's going to have to be different.
It has to be different because, in fact, an organ has to be built and voiced for a place. And it is the same in the church. But in fact, you know, especially in Europe, because we have a lot of reverberation in the churches, when you have the reverberation, then everything looks or sounds better. So even a bad instrument could sound more or less okay in a very good acoustic. And the problem is that in a concert hall, if the instrument is bad, then it doesn't work anymore. So it's very important, really, that an organ is rebuilt, and especially in a concert hall, for what it is used for. I was asked to supervise some organs in concert halls. Like the first one was in Montreal, and then immediately afterwards, the Philharmonie in Paris. And I said to the place, you know, and I wrote that down. I say, there are more chance that the organ will be unsuccessful than successful. And so we have to be aware of that before building the organ. And everything has to be built also for the organ. If we go in a hall which is dead for the acoustic or something like this, if the location of the organ is too high or not on the right place, et cetera, there are many things which makes that it won't work. And then, in fact, for example, in Montreal, we worked very close together with the architect, with the acoustician, with the organ builder, and then the result is just there. The organ is just wonderful. And there, it is an orchestral organ, but also made to recitals. So we can make a lot of things there. And it is the same also in Paris. And so we spent so many nights, you know, with the... because it was not possible to voice the organ during the day. The organ was busy during the day. We spent so many nights just voicing one stops, a few pipes, etc. I said, no, that doesn't work. We have to do that for the balance, etc., etc., etc. So it takes a lot of time, 6 months.
And what you're getting at is what they say about organs, that when you play an organ, you're not just playing the instrument, you're playing the whole room.
Of course, what would an organ be without the room? Nothing. You know, and for example, the organ of Notre Dame put somewhere else in a dead acoustic will be a disaster, probably a bad organ. I don't know, because it is really made for the room. And in fact, I don't know the name for that in English, but the cathedral or the hall, etc., would be the caisse de résonance of the organ, a little bit like a violin, you know?
Yeah. So the resonant chamber or the resonance chamber, yeah.
Exactly.
And so that brings us to what you're here to do, this piece by Strauss. And I wonder if you've ever played this piece and what it is that this piece asks of the organ. Is it as simple as just play really loud? Is there something more going on with this festival prelude that Strauss has asked the organ to do?
Well, depending on the conductor, it's just to be played loud, and that's okay. But, you know, Andris is someone who is so subtle in everything, every nuance, every musical details, that we have to follow everything for the nuance, for the rubato, etc., etc. And that makes things very, very interesting.
Well, so how much did you have to adjust your own way that you thought you were going to be doing this after working with Andris a little bit on it?
In fact, after the first rehearsal, I had to redo everything for the registration to be sure that it will work on the way he wants. And because, you know, the problem with organists, as I said, the conductors hate the organs, but sometimes they also hate the organists. because the organists are always, you know, a weight in the orchestra. It's something where they are never together with the orchestra, with the other musicians. They play too loud, too soft, etc., etc. So what I want to do by being an orchestra musician is just to be forgotten. So time with the organ when we play fortissimo is very difficult to be forgotten. But anyway, this is what I want, you know, not to disturb anybody, the audience, the conductor, and the musicians.
And is it the same case with the Scriabin, that you needed to settle in with the orchestra and with Andras to really find the registrations that you would use, or does the Scriabin work in a different way from the Strauss?
Wait, Scriabin is louder, so we do not have so many problems. It's louder when the organ comes, not before. So it's not that problematic there. It's just a big sound and then something from pianissimo to a big crescendo until the end. That's it. So when we've done that, it's okay. So it's not that problematic.
Yeah. Let's talk about your main home for your art, and that's the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. Tragically, a cathedral that had a disaster earlier this year. And I don't think we need to review the disaster itself. I won't ask you what you must have felt as this was unfolding before your eyes, wherever you were. I'm sure it must have been gut-wrenching. But tell me about the state of the organ, what you learned after the fire, and what's the way forward for the instrument in Notre Dame and for the cathedral itself?
Of course, I was very happy when I heard the next day that the organ was saved. The manager of Notre Dame went to the organ loft and told me, well, everything seems okay. There's a bit of water in the organ loft, but nothing in the organ. All the pipes are fine. There's a lot of dust, of course, but nothing else. And that was really a miracle. And in fact, the miracle is not for the organ, but also for the altar and for the statue of the Virgin. All the liturgical things of the cathedral are just saved.
Oh, wow.
So, which is really incredible. And I think, from my point of view, if we discussed, of course, with the architect of the cathedral, the fact that the spire fell down in the cathedral made a big opening. And then the heat just went out of the cathedral. Otherwise, the organ would have, you know, every pipe would have just collapsed on themselves because of the heat.
This is amazing because the spire falling was the moment that all of us watching from afar felt the worst about this whole disaster. It was unbelievable. But it's so nice to hear there is something good about the spire falling, that in a way it saved the organ.
It saved many things in the cathedral, not only the organ, I think. Because what would happen for the, for example, the heat could have destroyed the paintings and everything. So, no, all of that is just safe, and we are, of course, very pleased. So now the problem is that the cathedral is not secure yet, and it might take still 1 year, more or less, to secure everything, so which means that the vault can still fall down. Even now, and even in 6 months, we don't know. And it takes time to secure everything, because they put a big piece of wood everywhere, you know, just to support the arch, for example. They will put a roof above the cathedral and just below the vault, just to be sure to control, restore, to repair, to analyze the stones, etc. So that takes a long time, and this the most thing now is also to remove the scaffold, which is on the middle of the cathedral, which was supposed to be used for the restoration of the spire. And the problem is that scaffolding just burnt a bit, and all the piece of metal are just joined together. So it's a bit like a mikado, you know? When you plant the mikado, you don't have to touch something, otherwise everything just collapses, and it could be the same thing for that. And if the scaffolding just collapses, also the vault and the stones, everything at that place could collapse also. So they have to be very, very careful. About the organ... The organ is saved, as I said, but full of dust. And the problem is that we cannot do anything now in the organ before the cathedral is secured. And the problem is that he already suffered the fire in some ways, but also the heat last summer, which was enormous in Paris. Then also we'll have a winter and maybe another heat next summer before we remove the organ. And so I don't know how we will find the organ afterwards, because in fact, for the moment, the dust which is on the pipes, it's still dry. But if it becomes wet, then it will be fixed. And what can we do? So it will be a big disaster for all the pipes. And so the organ might not sound the same afterwards. So we are very, very anxious about that.
Wow! Still more reason to hope and keep our thoughts on this instrument and really the entire cathedral. Just such an amazing landmark that so many people are so touched by. The good news, what little good news there might be in relation to that, nothing could make up for it, but that you did record this recording of Bach's music before the disaster. And I think, as I understand it, it's the last recording made of the organ in Notre Dame. Is that right?
Yes, right. It is not only the last recording, but also the last video that we made also to promote the recording that you can find on YouTube, which is called Back to the Future, and with the toccata in G minor, and with a lot of sound effects and image effects.
Yeah, it's an amazing video. It's great.
Thank you. And so it shows the cathedral really in its it's a beauty just before a few months before the fire.
Yeah. Well, tell me about the decision even to record Bach, which of course you've played Bach probably since the moment you stepped up to an organ console. I mean, I can't imagine that any organist doesn't kind of start with Bach in some sense. But on this particular organ, this amazing Cavea Cole organ, it's in no way what Bach would have thought of as an organ. But tell me about your decision and what you knew this organ could give to this music.
In fact, at the beginning, when I was appointed at Notre Dame, I thought that this organ was not suitable to play Bach. But, I was in the way of politically musicologically informed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And in fact, I played like this, and for me, the organ of Notre Dame was something else. It was an organ to play Vienne, Vidor, Franck, Messiaen, all of that. But no Bach. And then after some years, I said, well, maybe if we think back in another way, a little bit like transcription, because when we play, for example, Bach on a piano, it's not a harpsichord. And what I hate is hearing the piano played like a harpsichord. If we are on a piano, we have to use the piano with everything, There are two ways in that case. The one would be Glenn Gould and all of the people. And the other way would be Cyprien Katsaris, who uses everything on the piano. You have octaves, you have things, he added chords, etc., etc. And then we hear piano. And I think the music works better that way on the piano than just making a harpsichord. If you want to have the sound of the harpsichord, why playing on the piano? Just go on the harpsichord. So it is the same for Notre Dame. So if we play the music by Bach there, then in that case, we have to go on the way of the organ. So with all the possibilities, and this is what I try to do.
Yeah, well, and so that must have led to a lot of thinking about what pieces would actually work, what pieces really do translate, because anyone who sits at the piano, like Cyprien Katsaris, which I'm glad you mentioned him, what an amazing pianist, they're not just taking any piece by Bach to play it. They're thinking through what's really going to work. How will they pull out the possibilities of this instrument? So tell me a little bit about your sifting through the immense catalog of Bach's works to choose the 10 or so that are on this recording.
Yes, in fact, it was very difficult to make a choice because there are a lot of pieces who do not work on that purpose. Because in fact, we have this big instrument which is French on any ways, a French sound, French color, French atmosphere, everything. So not polyphonic at all. So for the the music buyback is difficult. And above that, there's also the acoustic of the cathedral with the 7 seconds of reverberation. And so it's not possible to make something too polyphonic. Or we have to adjust, as I made in the Richard Carré from the Offrande Musicale. I just tried to, you know, to isolate voices. Or sometimes I'm playing in four manuals just to be sure to hear everything. And it works because the piece is not that fast. With a fugue, for example, like the E minor fugue or I don't know, other, it would not have worked. So I had to be very, very careful just to choose those pieces. So I would say that what works in Notre Dame is everything which is more going on the harmonic way. For example, the pièce d'orgue, Passacaglia in some way, some chorales like Erzählst du mich verlangen, it works perfectly. So I really tried to go that direction, and of course, we could not avoid the polyphony and to make that working, like in the first Richard, or maybe also in the G minor fugue, a small fugue. I asked the sound engineer to change the position on the mics. And in fact, we had different locations, and that helped to have also another sound depending on the pieces. And it works because we can have something more with more detail or something with the space of Notre Dame.
That's great. I have to say that one of the things that I like about this recording is that you might look at it and say, ah, the cathedral organ at Notre Dame, this will be magnificent. And the first thing you hear is this Richard, and it's very simple. And I love that you did that as the first track, because you expect maybe to be, you know, blown away at first, and no, you start out very simple, and it kind of grows from there. But you mentioned the pièce d'orgue, and this is, I think I'm right in that it's the one piece that Bach wrote that he gave a French title to. He wasn't in the habit of giving French titles to it. Is there something French about the pièce d'orgue?
Yeah, everything is French there.
How so?
Yeah, because in fact, especially the harmony on the middle part, and also this aspect of something sounding like a French plein jeu, which is a registration, you know, a mélange for the organ, which was very popular in the 17th and 18th century. All the Kyrie, Gloria, Sanctus, Agnus were starting with a plein jeu. And that was something really specific to the organ. And this is really something to... in relation with that piece, with the pièce d'orgue. So I started with the plein jeu, and of course it grows up like the organ of Notre Dame can do.
Well, and when you talk about the polyphony and defining the polyphony in the sound and how some people's pieces may not work for that, one of the things that struck me listening to the pièce d'orgue is that there are so many registers that you end up using those to clarify the opening up of the piece, especially in that middle section. It just grows and grows. And then when you think it can't grow any further, it grows some more because you're adding these layers to it. And in a way, compared to a North German organ that Bach would have played, in a way, it actually offers more clarity to it.
Well, thank you. I don't know. It's another world with the same music, but another world. In fact, what I wanted to do is just to make things, every part, clear, but not having something too evident, you know. So it took me a lot of time to make the registrations. There's a lot of combinations, registrations, etc. But we cannot hear maybe half of them, just because it's so subtle, you know. It's just to hear something and then not anymore, etc., etc., etc. And for me, it's very important that the organ reacts, especially that kind of organs like an orchestra.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of that, I notice in what you wrote about this recording that you hadn't recorded the Toccata and Fugue in D minor before, so that's kind of exciting, this iconic organ piece, now you've recorded it. But that to do it, you actually went to Stokowski's orchestration and looked at that. What did you learn from Leopold Stokowski's orchestral version of this piece that you then carried to Notre Dame with you?
Freedom. Yeah, that's the most important thing, because, you know, I think it's important we are educated, especially organists are educated to do what is correct, what is, as I said, politically, historically informed. But that kind of things just change every 5 years or maybe 2 years, I don't know. So when we look how we played back 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago, it's totally different. So what will be the next 10 years? In that case, I think we will go back to the spirit of the music if we just listen, have this freedom, and try to make a connection with the instrument, the music, the interpreter, the space, etc.
Then the other piece that I notice in what you've written, I was really fascinated by this, and I kind of feel like I want to look into it even more, but you mentioned one of the world's most famous organist, Marie-Claire Alain, and what she found in the Passacaglia in C minor. And explain exactly a little bit about what it was that she found embedded in there, and then how that also affected the way that you approached this in the cathedral.
Well, in fact, there are many analyses of this Passacaglia. Marie-Claire made an analyse where she made a connection between the chorale from the Orgelbüchlein and some part of the Passacaglia, and then she just found that, in fact, the Passacaglia just described the life of the Christ, going from nothing, from the birth, and then going to the cross, etc., and then the resurrection, and then etc., etc., etc. And it works very well. And in fact, the same melodic lines or symbols are used on those parts of the Passacaglia and some chorales, so it's very clear. And I would go even further, in fact, that for me, this Passacaglia would be an evocation of the Credo. Because in fact, you have in the Credo also the life of the Christ on the first part.
And this is the part of the Mass that in which a believer states their belief and everything behind their belief.
Yes, exactly. And then at the end, it says Christ will come back just to judge the dead and the live people, and then etc. And then his reign will be there forever. And then you have the figure of the Passacaglia just coming there at that point, and it's clear. It's absolutely clear. So.
And so the fugue is the symbol of eternity is really the fugue.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. tell me a little bit about how that translates into what you did with the organ in Notre Dame to bring all that to life. Is it a matter of registrations for each of those moments of Christ's life, or each of the moments of the Orgelbüchlein, or is there some other way that you outlined this in sound?
Yes, it's everything. Of course, the symbol is very important, but first the music, what the music has to tell us. When we have for example, six voices or something like this, or eight, or sometimes we just have three, etc., then we have, or two, or one. Of course, we won't have used the same registration, and this is what I try to do, just to go really on the way of the music. Beside the symbols.
Yeah. Well, Olivier Latry, it's fascinating to talk to you about all of this. I feel like I could talk to you all day. but I do appreciate your time today, and it's great to have you back here in Boston. Thank you very much.
Thank you.